That is not the Political Rewind comment on the Republican National Convention last night. That was actually the final song played over the loudspeakers in the queue in Cleveland as Donald Trump and family stood on stage accepting applause. And for those of you who are trivia-minded people, a debate today has broken out over why that song was used. Was it a middle finger up to the anti-Trump forces in the hall? Was it a comment on by an anti-Trump person who wanted to say something about him? I don't care what it was. It's a great song. How could we start the show with anything else? And the show, by that, I mean Political Rewind at 3:07 on a Friday afternoon. We're here live in the Midtown Atlanta studios of Georgia Public Broadcasting. It's been a long week, last night was an exciting, dramatic, fascinating evening at the Republican convention. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Hillary Clinton, who is poised to reveal the name of her VP choice. She may, we're told, delay it. She was going to release it at 5 this afternoon and then have a rally tomorrow with the choice. But because of the shooting in Munich, the campaign is considering putting off naming that candidate. But we'll talk about who the possibilities could be. So, all that said, we're joined in the studio by Brian Robinson, the former communications director and deputy chief of staff for Governor Nathan Deal. Eric Tannenblatt, one of the biggest Republican fundraisers in the Southeast, maybe in the country. Not in the country. Eric, come on, we're trying to build you up here a little.
Whatever.
Eric's back. And Billy Linville, a Democratic strategist who works with lots of Democratic candidates. He was here watching. He was a fly on the wall Wednesday when former Mayor Shirley Franklin was here. You'll recall, if you heard that show, we asked the mayor if she was going to run again. And she gave us a fairly open-ended answer that suggests she might. If she does, I have a feeling Billy Linville will be involved in that campaign. So thank you all very much for being here again today. So let me start, if I could. Let's listen to just a couple things that Trump had to say last night that I think sort of set us up for a conversation. Let's listen to his talking about being the law and order candidate.
Americans watching this address tonight have seen the recent images of violence in our streets and the chaos in our communities. I have a message for all of you. The crime and violence that today afflicts our nation will soon, and I mean very soon, come to an end. Beginning on January 20th of 2017, safety will be restored. The first task for our new administration will be to liberate our citizens from the crime and terrorism and lawlessness that threatens our communities. In this race for the White House, I am the law and order candidate.
So, Billy Linville, I'm going to start by giving a Democrat a chance here. That was largely the tone of this speech. A lot of it aimed at the fears that many Americans perhaps feel about being safe and secure. And a line we didn't include in that is when he talked about one of the things he said about Hillary Clinton is that the legacy of Hillary Clinton is death, destruction, and weakness.
Well, I think, unfortunately, that Donald Trump is trying to instill a false sense of fear with the American people. Violent crime today in America is lower than when President Obama took office. It's lower than when Ronald Reagan was in office, and it's historically low for many decades to come. So this apocalyptic, very dark future that Donald Trump is painting in America is not going to resonate with the majority of the people. But he is intentionally, I think, trying to create fear and suspicion, which I think ultimately will be very dangerous.
Eric, were you in the hall last night when Trump gave that speech?
I was not.
Okay. But you saw the crowd throughout the week, and you saw how they responded to a lot of these messages about fear and security. What are your thoughts on the way that played out throughout the week?
Well, I think just from talking to people that were on the floor last night and from watching it on television, he had all of the people energized. And I think that given what Americans have witnessed over the last several months, or actually the last few years with all of the shootings, they are scared. And I think it gets to a bigger issue where Americans are very uneasy with what has occurred over the last 8 years. And I think Donald Trump is tapping into that. And there's no doubt that by the end of this convention, the takeaway that I have is that people want change. They're tired of the establishment, and Donald Trump represents change.
Brian, one of the things that I found interesting, and really I think this is a conversation we should all have together, you know, there's all this talk about when will Trump pivot? When is he going to move to the middle? All that stuff since he secured the nomination. And last night he made something clear, unequivocally. There is no pivot. He is building his campaign around a belief that white voters, the message, this was a speech to white Americans, was my take on it. And he's building his hopes. He's betting there are enough white people in this country to get to the polls to elect him president. Have I got that wrong?
Well, I heard several interesting things that perked my ears up last night. He mentioned specifically the struggles of working class Latinos, the struggles of working class African Americans, the violence that those communities face on their streets of their neighborhoods. He did a shout out of acceptance and a call for tolerance and equal treatment for the LGBT community. And he mentioned Orlando, which Republicans, you know, took heat from the media for not mentioning that the victims there were LGBT. Donald Trump said it loud and clear last night and then thanked the audience for cheering for basically standing up for the humanity of those Americans. I think you see in some ways a party moving beyond its all-white base. Now, are most of his voters going to be white people? Yes. But I do think that there was a concerted effort in this convention to speak to audiences beyond that. That's going to be important, not just in this election, but critically important going into the 2020s. The Republican Party will cease to exist if we don't start getting people who are of Latino or African American or Asian American backgrounds.
Fair enough. I do think you point out that there were these moments here and there scattered throughout this speech where he did seem to be opening the door for more inclusiveness, but they were surrounded, I think, Eric Tannenblatt, by essentially a message that went out to white voters, yeah?
Well, Donald Trump is a new kind of Republican. I mean, even if you listen to his daughter, who indicated that, I think she even said, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I vote for the candidate. She said, I represent millennials. And, Donald Trump's kids are very influential on Donald Trump. We saw that as he picked his vice president. I think Donald Trump, as he was campaigning throughout this year, became a vessel for this pent-up anger in America. And he is now has the mantle of the Republican Party, and he has the ability to move the Republican Party. We'll see what happens with this election.
Well, the demographics of America is changing rapidly. Mitt Romney got a higher percentage of white voters in 2012 than Ronald Reagan did in 1984, yet he lost by 6 points. And that margin is going to continue to grow. But Donald Trump cannot open the mind of Hispanic people to vote for him if he starts the conversation by saying all Mexican immigrants are rapists and thieves. He can't open the minds of African Americans to have a conversation about supporting him if he talks about the fact that the president wasn't born in America and he's illegitimate. So they're never going to get over that hump to have a real conversation with the minority community because of these very vitriolic attacks.
But Billy, you're giving the same argument that Democrats have given for years against Republicans. This is a different kind of candidate. And what I heard Donald Trump, let's take the African-American community. He was talking to them last night saying, you deserve better. You should not have to be trapped in the poverty that you're in. That's very similar to what Paul Ryan has been saying. So I think he's a different kind of candidate than we have seen, both Republicans and Democrats.
There's no doubt about it. He's different. And there had to be a lot of uncomfortable moments inside the arena last night. Like, for me, one of the main reasons that I'm a Republican is I believe in free markets. I believe in open trade between countries because I believe it enriches Americans. It raises our standard of living by making products less expensive and opening up markets for the stuff that we make. I disagree fundamentally with what Donald Trump was saying about trade last night. And most of the people in that audience did too. And that is, to your point, he is a different kind of Republican, and there are going to be some awkward moments for us over these next 6 months. I know how much heat Governor Deal took for doing the right thing and vetoing that RFRA that religious freedom legislation this year. And some of the people who are the most angry were in the Georgia delegation representing our state there, and they heard a very pro-tolerance, pro-accepting LGBT message last night. Now, I think some change is necessary. The way we were going wasn't going to work long-term. We had to have the freedom to be a little more flexible ideologically. We've had this rigidity imposed on us by the Tea Party faction, and it was heading us toward the rocks quickly. So if nothing else, no matter what happens this fall, I believe that Donald Trump has made it okay to say things outside of traditional conservative orthodoxy. And that's an important change. That may be his legacy, even if he loses this election.
So I want to listen to another one of the sound bites from the speech, but I ask you to think a little bit. Billy, all of you. You know, I kept hearing this speech last night through the ears of Georgia voters, especially in North Georgia, where the demographics are changing so dramatically. And I thought about whether or not there's a message that resonates with a diverse community in Metro Atlanta and North Georgia or not. And so let's listen to a couple more sound bites. And then if you don't mind, I'd love to see if you can talk about it with that filter in mind. Here's the nationalist, the message of Americanism, of America First, was loud and clear last night, as it has been throughout the entire Trump campaign.
Americanism, not globalism, will be our credo as long as we are led by politicians who will not put America first. Then we can be assured that other nations will not treat America with respect, the respect that we deserve.
Okay, so here's a toss-up question. Trump talks about America first, among other things, bringing jobs back to America. One of the questions that's been raised about him from the very beginning is how he accomplishes that. Think about North Georgia, where we've lost the textile industry years ago already. Other manufacturing has dried up in the state. In some ways, it seems to me, when he talks in such nationalistic terms, among other things, he is suggesting that we're going to go back to an economy that simply is not going to happen again in this country. There will be no manufacturing economy to any great extent in this country. Will there be?
Well, though there may be, it may not be the same kind of manufacturing jobs that we've had in the past. But keep in mind, and I hate to sound like I'm beating a dead horse, but 4 in 5 Americans have not seen their economic conditions change in the last 8 years. And these people are frustrated. They're scared. They're seeing what's happening all over the world, and they're angry. And he represents change. And if that is the message that he uses throughout this campaign, which I have no doubt he's not going to use it, I think that he's going to mobilize people that may not have voted in the past and could potentially win.
Well, I think historically the term America First is very relevant and has dark undertones to it, certainly historically. But I think that for Donald Trump last night to say that he is going to reopen the coal mines and get those workers back in the mines is a disservice to them. It's a disservice to the people listening, because we can't go back to those days, and we have to continue to move forward given our technology and the new economy and the globalization that is necessary to trade with free countries. So I think he's being very demagogic, And we also have to point out the fact that we have the strongest economy in the world. The unemployment rate is lower now than it was during Ronald Reagan's term. So I don't think that this is factual with the American economy or is really relevant with the most of the American people.
I am thrilled to hear Billy Linville's hearty endorsement of free trade agreements. Welcome aboard, buddy.
Free but fair.
And I'll remind you that Billy Linville is a Democrat, and the two candidates for his party nomination, one was the most hostile to trade probably in the entire country, Bernie Sanders, as are his supporters. And he was so effective in driving that anti-trade message that Hillary Clinton, who has a long history of being on the right side of trade, going back to her husband's NAFTA, which has been fantastic for America's economy for 22 years now, that she had to backtrack and be like, whoa, I was really never for these trade agreements. I know I said I was. I know I went around the country and around the world promoting this Trans-Pacific Asian-American trade agreement. But I was kidding. I was just joking. I'm not really for that. So you're seeing the anti-trade message really resonate now. It must be pulling through the roof. That to me, it's unfortunate because it's wrong. It's going to hurt middle class and working class Americans because we're not going to reverse the global economy. Our hope for getting those people, those four out of every five who haven't seen their incomes go up, is to get them into college, get them higher advanced degrees, make sure they don't have children before they get married. These are how you climb out of poverty, how you change your economic circumstances. It's not by putting up trade barriers that are going to drive up the prices at Walmart.
Well, that's why I suggest that the Americanism message for some people is not going to... I get that that what Eric Tanenblatt says is true. There are many millions of Americans who have not seen their wages increased, who are desperate to feel
that
they
people
have,
that are no longer on the employment rolls, as Billy's talking about the unemployment rate being low.
So I get that message resonates to some extent. The question, though, is that when you talk about Americanism, there's a militancy there that I think some people find a little unnerving. And then this notion of, okay, America first, create the jobs, help build an economy without the rest of the world. And that's the challenge that I think Brian Robinson talks about. But let's do this. Let's listen to see if we all agree. When it came right down to it, the message that I thought there were some brilliant touches in this speech last night, and I think this was one of them.
Every day I wake up determined to deliver a better life for the people all across this nation that have been ignored, neglected, and abandoned. I have visited the laid-off factory workers and the communities crushed by our horrible and unfair trade deals. These are the forgotten men and women of our country, and they are forgotten, but they're not going to be forgotten long. These are people who work hard, but no longer have a voice. I am your voice.
I think we're going to be hearing that over and over. I am your voice. And it's a powerful message. It's, you know, it's recalling Richard Nixon in 1968 to some extent. The silent majority. I am mobilizing the silent majority. Eric, you're nodding.
I am. Look, this guy defied all the odds. A year ago, I thought there is no way this guy can win the nomination. And he did. And we can't take that away from him. And as Newt Gingrich said the other night, he said this guy kicked over the table. And he is, you know, changing American politics.
Can he win with that message? I am your voice. Are there enough voters out there who will believe he is their voice?
I guess we'll find out in November. I have no
There's
idea.
No model. Eric's right. There's no model. Right. We have no idea how this is going to work.
That seems so right, Billy, what they're
saying. But if you take
the
next step, it doesn't add up because he says wages are too high for workers. He's opposed to a minimum wage. And how can you say you speak for working people if you take those specific positions? And his economic packages is more of the same that got us in trouble in the first place. Extreme tax cuts for the rich. And so it sounds good, but when you dig a little deeper, it's not going to connect.
But
because it's he's talking out of both sides of his mouth.
But again, this is a candidate who is betting the farm on the fact that that message, I am your voice, we're going to find out. You know, a lot of people talked about what a dark speech this was last night. And I think to some extent, it's probably fair to say that much of it was. But that's the gamble. The gamble is the people will vote their fears in November. Is that an overstatement, Brian?
No, it's a reflection of where the American people are. I was a little bit taken aback by the negative commentary amongst the pundits last night, because 70% of Americans in polling believe the country is on the wrong track. That's not partisan. That's sort of across the board. And you're seeing the messages resonate that speak to those 70% who think the system is rigged, who think they're getting a bad deal, who think they've worked harder and harder and harder and they can't get ahead, and they see other people reaping all the awards of our economy.
But Brian, also, President Obama has a 56% approval rating. That's astronomical in year 8 of a presidency. And I think a lot of the people that are dissatisfied are very unhappy with the political discourse in this country, the obstructionism that's taken place in Congress. So I think there's a lot to account for that 70%. But Barack Obama is a very, very popular man.
I'll tell you what, let's get a break in. When we come back, I want to continue this conversation, talking a bit about the speech last night. We really need to hear from Ivanka Trump, who gave an extraordinary speech on behalf of her father last night, it seems to me. And I also want to compare the way Trump framed his message last night to some other Republican nominees when they gave their acceptance speeches. It's 3:28 on Friday afternoon. This is Political Rewind. We'll be right back. Everybody okay? Yeah.
Hey, it's Peter Sagal. Having your car towed is never a good feeling unless it means more public radio. Donate your unwanted car and help support this public radio station. Watch your car get towed away and feel good about it.
Go to gpb.org/cars or call 877-GPB-1-CAR and thanks.
You're listening to Political Rewind on Georgia Public Broadcasting, an 18-station radio network. Good afternoon. I'm Ellen Reinhart. GPB Atlanta is licensed to Georgia State University, offering 55 undergraduate and graduate degree programs in more than 250 fields of study.
Welcome back to Political Rewind. We have Republicans Eric Tannenblatt and Brian Robinson and Democrat Billy Linville in the studio with us today. This is a good time to mention you should join this conversation on Twitter. I don't promote our Twitter handle enough, but this is the perfect day. You really should be tweeting us and telling us what you think about what you heard last night. We're at PoliticsGPB. I also will mention very quickly that we have a special edition of Political Rewind on the air next Tuesday at 2 o'clock because the Democratic Convention will be underway. So we hope you can join us for that. So I want to compare Trump to some other Republican candidates. But before we do, I think we should listen to Ivanka Trump, because I think most people feel she did an exceptional job on behalf of her father last night.
He is colorblind and gender neutral. He hires the best person for the job, period. At my father's company, there are more female than male executives. Women are paid equally for the work that we do. As president, my father will change the labor laws that were put in place at a time when women were not a significant portion of the workforce. And he will focus on making quality childcare affordable and accessible for all.
Ivanka Trump. Eric, beginning of a big outreach to undecided suburban women and others, perhaps?
Oh, absolutely. I think I've heard nothing negative about her remarks, only positive. Not only did she reach out to women, but as I said before, millennials, and those are two very important voting blocks.
I thought that it was a fantastic speech. I think that she is saying things that we haven't been really good about saying in the past, emphasizing things that we haven't been good at emphasizing, particularly as it comes to the challenges facing working moms and working women. And I do, if there was one negative thing I heard, I saw conservative blowback on social media last night to the changing policy for working moms, because Republicans have consistently seen that as basically just open season for lawsuits against employers, and it's an unfunded mandate that gets pushed off onto other employees and employers. So there is a business argument to be made against those things, but it is something that we as a party need to discuss. And if we're not going to go with what Ivanka said, we need to give working moms and working mothers some other alternative to show them some of the way that we're with them. If people don't want uncontrolled immigration in this country, we've got to reproduce at the replacement rate. The reason why we have immigration is because Americans aren't reproducing at the replacement rate. Maybe we can if we are more accommodating for working moms.
Well, I think Ivanka Trump did give a great speech. She was very poised and was very professional. And
it seems like they might have had a little fan there under the podium, because her hair was blowing.
It was delightful.
Very dramatically. She looked great.
Yeah, something out of Hollywood. But she was clearly focusing her message on women, because a great majority of women in America have an unfavorable opinion of Donald Trump. And what she said was very, very attractive, but at the same time, that Donald Trump's words and actions in a very misogynistic way against women is the reason that she's trying to change that narrative.
But Hillary Clinton is so untrusted by voters out there right now, including female voters, Billy, that if I were a Democrat, I'd wonder if Ivanka Trump isn't going to be the beginning of a really big effort to try to win some of those women who don't think much of Hillary over to the Trump side.
Well, Donald Trump's name is on the ticket, not Ivanka Trump.
Okay. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, I was just going to say, not just Ivanka, but Eric and Don Jr. And Tiffany, his kids, I thought were the real stars of the week. Because Donald Trump, again, anti-establishment, didn't have the party elected officials in mass behind him. And these are people that know him better than anyone, his family. And I think they opened the door and gave us some insight into who Donald Trump the man is, not Donald Trump the performer that we've seen. And I think it was very helpful.
All right. We are getting some tweets. Leon Cosby III tweets, "He surprised me." Leon, tweet us again. Surprised you in a good way or a bad way? We really want to hear that from you. Jeffrey McLaughlin says, "America is an information-based economy and has moved beyond manufacturing. Anyone who says otherwise is selling you something." That goes along with a conversation we had. So, all right, Eric, you talk about how the kids helped soften him up. Trump himself, given the opportunity in his speech, really didn't do much with with telling us who he is the way other nominees before him have done. There was very little of the personal Donald Trump. The candidate you worked hard for in 2012 was Mitt Romney, not a guy who was thought of as Mr. Warm and Fuzzy. He was, many people considered him kind of stiff and reserved, and yet I think most of us who pay attention to politics will not forget at least some of the comments he made in his acceptance speech in 2012, including this.
"My mom and dad were married for 64 years, and if you wondered what their secret was, you could have asked the local florist, because every day, Dad gave Mom a rose, which he put on her bedside table. That's how she found out what happened on the day my father died. She went looking for him because that morning there was no rose. My mom and dad were true partners, a life lesson that shaped me by everyday example. When my mom ran for the Senate, my dad was there for her every step of the way. I can still see her saying in her beautiful voice, 'Why should women have any less say than men about the great decisions facing our nation?'"
Mitt Romney in his acceptance speech in 2012. Do we need to hear this kind of personal narrative from a candidate? And did Donald Trump miss an opportunity to tell us more about who he is from his heart last night? Anybody?
I just don't know that that's his personality to talk about himself like that. And I think that's why he utilized his kids to do some of it. He had other speakers to do some of it. Hopefully throughout the campaign, there'll be more. Remember, with Mitt Romney, yes, that was a good part of that speech, and I'm glad he did that. But even after he lost the race and there was that Netflix movie about him, people said, boy, I wish that Mitt Romney movie came out before the election because we got to see a side of him we didn't get to see.
Okay, but don't we, so Brian, Billy, shouldn't we expect, if Hillary Clinton next Thursday night in Philadelphia doesn't tell, that's always the complaint about her. She doesn't humanize herself. She's not real in some ways. If she doesn't do that next week, will she be missing the same opportunity that maybe Trump missed last night?
I think the American people fundamentally want to have a personal relationship with their president. And so any time that you can look deeply into that person in terms of who he or she is as an individual, where they came from, what their family is like, I think that that's very important to people, and I think it certainly enhances likability, which is very important as well.
Brian, we hear about, you know, Trump the narcissist, Trump the businessman who takes no prisoners, Trump who sues thousands of people over the years. So don't we need a more personal story?
I think we got some degree of that from the Trump kids. I think that was the role that they played in this convention. I don't think that they're going to do a deep dive into his softer side because he's got a brand to protect, and that brand has gotten this far. And as they say, you dance with the one who brung you or it doesn't work out for you. So you saw him sticking to his message, sticking to his brand last night. There's not it's for someone else to do the soft, lovable side. And I don't think that it really matters in this election because Donald Trump has been in the public eye since the 1980s, Hillary Clinton since 1991, in an almost ubiquitous fashion. I mean, they have been in my eyesight, you know, every week for the majority of my life. People have opinions of them already. Moving those personal opinions on those two candidates is going to be near impossible for any campaign to pull off. And so I don't think in this particular situation it matters because the opinions are already formed. And for both candidates, okay, the opinions are very negative for both of them.
But that's my point. You got to turn them positive somehow. I want to go back in history again. And here's the setup. Again, there are an awful lot of the punditry, and we know how wrong the pundits have been throughout this entire last year. But a lot of the people who observe politics have been saying this was such a dark, such a negative speech, not enough light, not enough hopefulness exhibited. You can decide for yourselves whether you agree with that. But I was thinking about 1968, as I think a lot of other people were. Richard Nixon comes into his convention to accept the nomination. Vietnam War is in full swing. Protesters have taken over many streets. In American cities, there are clashes with police. It's one of the most troubled times that we've seen in this country in the last 100 years, I think it's fair to say, in the country itself. And Nixon did something interesting, and we're going to play a minute of it. Like Trump, he paints a dark picture of where we stood as a country in 68, and he does evoke a certain fear that he wants to help remedy. But listen to a turn that he makes just in this one excerpt from his acceptance speech in 1968.
As we look at America, we see cities enveloped in smoke and flame. We hear sirens in the night. We see Americans dying on distant battlefields abroad. We see Americans hating each other, fighting each other, killing each other at home. And as we see and hear these things, millions of Americans cry out in anguish. Did we come all this way for this? Did American boys die in Normandy and Korea and in Valley Forge for this? Listen to the answer to those questions. It is another voice. It is a quiet voice in the tumult of the shouting. It is the voice of the great majority of Americans, the forgotten Americans, the non-shouters, the non-demonstrators. They're not racist or sick. They're not guilty of the crime that plagues the land. They are black and they are white. They're native-born and foreign-born. They're young and they're old. They work in America's factories. They run America's businesses. They serve in government. They provide most of the soldiers who died to keep us free. They give drive to the spirit of America. They give lift to the American dream.
So that's Richard Nixon in 1968. I find it fascinating, Brian, because he doesn't say that all those people he enumerated are victims.
He says they're our hope. They're the ones who are, in the long run, going to rescue us from the dark dreams that he paints at the beginning. And that was a brilliantly written speech. And Nixon's always been known for having had great speech writers.
William Sapphire and Pat Buchanan, I mean, too.
Not bad.
It's a good place to start. There's so many parallels between 2016 and 1968. I mean, you had the riots in Chicago at the Democratic Convention. This is the year that MLK and RFK were shot and killed. You had a controversial war going on. Think about it. In 2016, both vice presidential announcements were delayed by gunfire incidents. How incredible is that? It's daily. It's almost minute by minute now. So there is this feeling of there's sirens in the street and there's fear of what's going on at home and abroad. And I think Trump spoke to that sentiment very effectively last night. I think a dark speech reflects a dark time, which I think we can all agree that we're in. And he did say, I'm going to try to fix it, or I am going to fix it. So there was some hopefulness. There was some solutions-based approach to it.
Well, the violence you alluded to, the two incidents, took place in Europe, in Germany and France. They didn't take place on the streets in America. We're in a very stable situation.
Well, you had Orlando.
Donald Trump delayed
San Bernardino. Donald Trump delayed his
vice presidential announcement due to an incident in Germany today.
But you're not denying that we have people worried, if not frightened.
Oh, certainly. But you can't compare it to 1968, in which Dr. Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy just been assassinated. The draft was ongoing. Hundreds of American soldiers were being killed every week. That is a false equivalency to what's happening today.
Well, it's not exactly the same, but we also have just had 8 years where we were promised hope and change. And there are a lot of people that have not seen hope or change, and they're angry. And just like I said before, I don't want to beat a dead horse. You have 80% of Americans that have seen their economic conditions either stay the same or decline.
All right, but if I can, Eric, can I bring you back to what I was trying to say there? Nixon, because of the brilliance of that speech, found a way to turn a dark message to one of hope. Did Trump do that last night or not?
I think he did.
Where?
I think when he talked about the solutions, you know, he laid out the problems and then talked about the solutions. And if he's able to accomplish the things that he set out to do, I think that's the hope.
All right, let me read a couple of tweets, and then we're going to take a break and come back. We got a lot more to talk about. Khalid says, it's 1968 again, except this time George Wallace actually wins the Republican nomination. We have Patty Shelhaus says, Trump is changing American politics. Well, she's quoting you and tweeting your quote out to her followers.
Smart lady.
DM Robertson talks about the Democratic vice presidential pick. We'll get to that in a couple minutes. He wants Elizabeth Warren. Rob White says he wants to get rid of bad trade deals, not all trade. Speaking of Trump, get your facts right, dudes. I think that's about you, Brian Robinson.
I stand by my facts.
Rob White also says, way to call Donald Trump a misogynist, then comment on his daughter's great looks. Fair enough, except what we were really commenting on was the Hollywoodization with the fan that seemed to be blowing in her hair, Rob. We'll take a break right now and be back.
One of three Baton Rouge police officers ambushed and killed Sunday, Matthew Gerald, will be buried today.
He had a lot of pride in himself and his job, but he didn't want to boast about it. And when people thanked him, he said, hey, you know, I'm just doing my job.
The funeral of Matthew Gerald later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear that on All Things Considered, which gets underway at 4 o'clock this afternoon right here on GPB.
Welcome back to the post-Republican Convention edition of Political Rewind. Billy Linville, Eric Tannenblatt, Brian Robinson are in the studio with me. Eric Tannenblatt, you were in the hall, is that right, when Ted Cruz made his brave speech in which he defied the Trump crowd and didn't endorse him?
It was.
What was that like?
It was one of the few speeches where the entire convention center was completely quiet. You could hear a pin drop. And I think the expectation
was that he was going to build up to endorsing Donald Trump. And when he didn't, ruckus broke out. The boos. Donald Trump then walks in the back, and it was a lot of drama. I think Ted Cruz did a lot of damage to himself.
It's just mind-boggling that, but it's also Ted Cruz, right? I mean, I was going to say it's mind-boggling anyone would do that, but we're talking about Ted Cruz, who is arguably, maybe inarguably, the most disliked man in the United States Senate.
And this is someone who has been cheered by the right for years for being the skunk at the garden party. So I can imagine his surprise at getting booed for being the skunk at the garden party, right, which is what he was.
The reason I bring this up, it's old news by now, except Ted Cruz is, even as we're on the air, presumably flying in to Atlanta Hartsfield Airport and getting set to be taken down to Noonan, where he is going to appear at a rally for third district congressional candidate Mike Crane, who's in a runoff with Drew Ferguson. And, I thought, gee, Mike Crane, when this news first broke early in the week that Ted Cruz was endorsing Crane, it seemed to me, it felt like, wow, that's a big deal for Mike Crane and what presumably is a close race. Not so much right now, maybe. I caught up with Mike Crane to ask him about this morning about whether he really was still enthusiastic about having Cruz come in on his behalf.
Is it still a good idea to have him here to campaign on your behalf?
It's always a good idea to have one of the most constitutionally sound leaders in our nation to come campaign, not for me, but for America. I think the points he made in his speech were dead on, and they were perfect for the American people. I'm going to take his admonition, and I'm going to wholeheartedly support Trump in the November election, and I'm going to encourage everybody else to do so.
Do you think voters are upset with Ted Cruz down in your district?
Well, in this environment, you're always going to have some of that type of, you're going to have people that love you and people that don't like you so much. And that just comes with the territory. But, you know, principles don't bow at popularity.
That's Mike Crane talking about Ted Cruz coming in on his behalf. Before we talk about it, I also talked to Drew Ferguson, his opponent, about the Cruz visit. And here's what he said.
Ted Cruz absolutely did his part to make sure that Hillary Clinton was elected because of his own ego. And having Ted Cruz come to Georgia, to the 3rd District, as his first stop after he stunk up the national stage, I just think says an awful lot.
After he stunk up the national stage. Brian Robinson, you had a dog in that fight down there during the primary campaign. So you got to know the 3rd District even better than you may have already known it.
Yeah, I worked for Congressman Westmoreland, the incumbent, for 5 years.
Oh, my gosh, that's right. I'd forgotten about that part of your portfolio. Okay, so how do you think Ted Cruz plays in the 3rd District coming in tonight?
Well, Trump won that district during the Georgia primary on Super Tuesday, or SEC primary day. It's not the position that Mike Crane wants to be in, where he's having to wade into this national controversy. It's absolutely hilarious to watch from the sidelines. And I think it's fitting because the Mike Crane wing of the party, the Ted Cruz wing of the party, has been this one that we're the only people who are pure, we're the only people who are righteous, we're the only people who never compromise. And those chickens are coming home to roost now. And it's good. And it goes just to Eric's earlier point about the party changing. You may see more pragmatic center-right Republicans beginning to sort of reclaim their party a little bit here if Crane gets a little blowback for embracing Cruz after, as Ferguson so eloquently put it, Cruz stunk up the stage.
Yeah, I mean, Georgians are pretty well-mannered individuals, and if Ted Cruz felt the way he felt, he shouldn't have accepted the invitation to speak. And
absolutely.
As Anna Navarro, the CNN commentator, said, you know, it's like going to a dinner party and drinking someone's wine, eating their food, and then urinating on their rug.
Yeah.
But Bill, I'd like
you
to
can say that on public radio, and it's fine. Thank you.
That was the cleaned up version.
That was a cleaned up version. Yeah.
I think that if Donald Trump goes on to lose badly in November, Ted Cruz could end up looking like a hero, because I think the party will go back to the social conservatism that it has been. But clearly, if Donald Trump were to win, then I think that it spells the end of Ted Cruz.
Ann Navarro's line was great. Dan McClagan, who is a political operative, all of us in this room, I think all of us have dealt with at one point or another, had a great comment. He's working for Drew Ferguson. His line was, maybe Crane will forget to pick him up at the airport tonight when he comes in. All right, let's talk Hillary Clinton for a few minutes, Billy Linville. The odds-on favorite as her choice for VP, everybody seems to be focusing on Tim Kaine, now senator from Virginia. We may still be getting that announcement this afternoon, although it may be put off till tomorrow. What do you think about all that?
I think that it probably is going to be Tim Kaine. I understand that President Obama and President Bill Clinton signed off on that choice as well. It indicates that she feels pretty good where she is right now. And that McCain is certainly a safe choice. He's fluent in Spanish. He's well-respected on both sides of the aisle. He's a very calm and intelligent presence in the Senate. So I think it will be viewed positively, but I think it's an indication that Hillary Clinton feels pretty good where she is.
The more liberal wing of the party, though, isn't thrilled, and I'm not sure the Bernie Sanders folks are thrilled about a Tim Kaine, Billy.
I think weeks ago there was concern about the Bernie Sanders wing of the party enthusiastically gravitating toward Hillary. But I think that those fears are at bay now, because I think the party is certainly united, and I don't think there's any concern from the left.
In 1992, many of us who were covering presidential politics back then, and you were part of the campaign working for the Bush re-election campaign, we were all kind of stunned and I think excited, even reporters, when Bill Clinton made the really unorthodox decision to put his opponent, Al Gore, on the ticket. Two young Southerners running for, and it electrified the country. It was a brilliant choice. I keep thinking, it's not going to happen, but I keep thinking, boy, if Elizabeth Warren would be possibly the same kind of choice for a Hillary Clinton.
Oh, I'd bring it on, please. we've just spent 55 minutes talking about Donald Trump, Ted Cruz, and Hillary Clinton, and we failed to have we haven't talked one moment about Mike Pence. And I don't want to let this show end without bringing up the fact that the first decision, big decision, a presidential nominee makes is who his running mate is. And it says something about what kind of leader that person is going to be.
What does it tell you? What does the choice of Pence tell you about Trump?
It says to me that he's serious about this job, that he picks someone who has a proven track record, not just as a governor of a state where he's cut taxes and balanced budgets, but that he also was a leader in the Congress. And it shows me that Trump recognizes that if he's going to be successful, he's going to need to reach out to both members of the House and the Senate.
Okay. Look at Georgia. You've got the question becomes, I mean, is, first of all, do we think Georgia is even vaguely in play in November? Anybody?
No. Yes, I think.
You
think
it's
in
is.
Play,
yes. Sure. Okay. Pence, Tim Kaine. Do either of them have any influence, to the extent that vice presidential running mates do, have on the thinking of Georgians?
I think they're pretty insignificant.
Okay. Fair enough. I think we're really poised now. We've watched the Republicans. We're going to move into Philadelphia on Monday. So, Billy, I'm going to give you a chance, as I've done with Republicans this week, to say what your hopes and expectations are coming out of Philadelphia, or going into and coming out of Philadelphia. What do you want this convention to do?
I want the convention to come out unified. I want it to be optimistic and positive. They certainly have to draw the contrast to Donald Trump, but I don't think in any way it's going to be so negative and dark as the Republican convention was. And I think coming out, there's going to be a great deal of enthusiasm, and I think the polls will reflect that.
Anybody, either of you guys want to comment on what you think the Democrats ought to be able to do on Monday, through Thursday?
You know, one thing that's going to be interesting is three Georgians will have speaking roles, Jason Carter, Kasim Reed, and Stacey Abrams, the House Minority Leader. It says to me that the Democrats disagree with Eric that they don't have a shot here. I am keeping my eye on that, because if the Democrats start to spend money in Georgia, it's a really bad sign for us nationally, because if we're in play, this thing's gonna be bad. But I think it gives us a great local angle for this convention.
Let me give one quick shout out. That's a good observation. Let me give a quick shout out to your former boss. He was not on the speaking schedule at the convention itself, but he was up there for a panel on criminal justice and got great reviews for how he is handled. This is Governor Nathan Deal. Criminal justice reform, moving away from imprisonment and trying to rehabilitate and help offenders. He got great reviews this past week.
He gets great reviews, and anybody is willing to really listen to him and hear him out. It's great conservative reform, because not only is it making lives better, it's making communities safer, and it's costing taxpayers less. When he came into office in 2011, the Department of Corrections said, we're going to have to spend $254 million because our prisons are full. We're going to have to build more cells. This was at the heart of the recession. We were still cutting like crazy. There was no $254 million. It was the critical time to do the reforms that he put into place. And there has not been this blowback of people, of violent criminals getting back out on the streets and committing murders. His reforms are working.
All right, we're really almost out of time. A couple of quick tweets that we want to get to. NPH237 says, Trump plays by his own rules and is praised. Cruz defends his family, speaking his conscience. He's crucified. And Ronaldo Del Toro says, Pence is undoubtedly the voice of reason, Eric, but will Trump overshadow his efforts to appeal to the establishment voters they need? So Ronaldo gets the last word on this Political Rewind. Keep the conversation going at PoliticsGPB. Let us know what you're thinking about this extraordinary presidential campaign that is unfolding before our very eyes. We're just about out of time for today's show. Remember, again, we will be on the air with a special Democratic Convention edition of Rewind on Tuesday next week at 2 o'clock, and then back on Wednesday at 2 and Friday at 3, our usual time slots. My thanks go out to the great staff that we have in the control room today. Senior producer Jenny Ahmed, producer Trevor Young, our great new technician and board operator Tyler Morris, our terrific interns Hannah Rose Adams and Caroline Hayes. Thank you all for making the show work as well as it does when it does. I'm Bill Nygut. See you all again next Tuesday at 2:00.